from WCVB Channel 5 podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. Today's guest, Adam Jones of 98.5, the Sports Hub. He's going to help us break down the Patriots' disappointing season opener against the Miami Dolphins. There were some positive signs in terms of the new passer, but at the end of the day, it's still a loss. That brings us to this. Is Mac Jones good enough for the Patriots to make the playoffs with? Jones has some questions. Also, who is to blame for the Patriots' red zone woes? And they don't just stretch back to Sunday. Actually, they stretch all the way back to 2019. And Jones tells us why Sunday is a must-win game for the Patriots against the New York Jets. And Ellen Fleming has an issue with all the Tom Brady talk. Why are we still talking about Tom Brady? Why is he still the point of reference? Why is he still the bar that Mac Jones has to clear? Ellen?
It's outrageous to me to think that Mac Jones is going to compete with Tom Brady. He's obviously not going to. And I understand, like, right after Tom left and we had Cam, it was a discussion of, was it Brady or was it Belichick? And, like, clearly we have learned that it was, in fact, Brady. Brady is the greatest of all times. Yada, yada, yada. He can go to any team. They're going to be great. We need to get over it. He's never coming back. Wherever he goes, it's going to be fantastic. We're not going to have him. We're not going to have someone like him.
But we're still constantly checking his Instagram to see what he's doing.
It's like,
and he's doing great, and it hurts.
It's just like when you break up with someone or your friend breaks up with someone, and even if they have a nice new girlfriend, boyfriend, whoever, they're still talking about their ex. It's like, get over it. We have to move on.
Yeah, I could see that. But it's like if your ex was the greatest human being of all time.
Yeah, but like they left. You know, it's gone. What's
yeah,
done,
but,
is done.
But you also sort of look back and say, like, you know, what could have been? Why didn't they stay? Could we have done more for them to stay? It is tough, though. Here's what I'll say. I understand where you're coming from. And I think it's a unique perspective that maybe is not out there enough. But I think here's the issue. People around here are so used to the Patriots winning and performing at a certain level. And Tom Brady is a big part of that level. And even internally in the building, they say, we have to play to the standard. Well, what's the standard? Who set the standard? Tom Brady. So even the Patriots are still indirectly talking about Tom Brady. If the Patriots just came out and said, you know what? Tom Brady's not here anymore. And without Tom Brady, we have to sort of lower our sights and lower our goals, which I understand they would never do. Then it would be different. But the reality is it's still all getting passed off by Bill Belichick and everybody else. Like, they're the same championship organization. So that's the standard, win a championship. And Tom Brady is the standard.
Yeah, no, I agree with you with the whole, like, Bill Belichick pretending like we're a status quo as always.
Yeah.
But, like, we as a collective, as Pats fans, like, we need to move on.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a good point. I haven't heard a lot of it. It's a very good point that you're making here. And maybe everybody will be able to move on. Maybe October the 3rd, when Tom Brady returns to Gillette Stadium, will be the closure that all the Pats fans and that the Patriots organization needs. But we're going to open up this podcast with Adam Jones, and he's next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, now, as promised, we're joined by Adam Jones of 98.5, The Sports Hub. Adam, thanks for joining us here today on the Take 5 podcast.
Of course, I'm excited.
I know, I'm surprised you're awake. I mean, you're a creature of the night. This might be a little early for you. I see there's actually some light streaming into whatever room you're in Chateau Jones.
Too much for my taste.
Yeah,
it's too much.
Yeah, I can see your vampire-like skin is just, you know, it's absolutely rebelling against it.
This is me at the end of summer, so this is as good as it gets.
Speaking of vampires, right? People used to feel like Bill Belichick and the Patriots were like a vampire. You couldn't kill him. And now all of a sudden, it's very different. The start of the Mac Jones era, obviously, they lose the game 17-16, but it was moral victory Monday after Mac Jones played as well as he played. Now, you were on Mac Jones as early as anyone I know that he was going to be the starter. So I want to start there before we break down his performance. What gave you the insight, the knowledge, the comfort that Mac Jones was going to be the guy over Cam?
It was a pretty simple math equation, and it's not like I was down there. You know, Gasper, I'm not down there. I'm not going to practice. I'm not watching what's going on. I'm not seeing it firsthand. I'll see some videos and read some reports, but I think it's pretty simple. They drafted Mac Jones in the first round the year after Cam Newton looked completely washed. I'm not dumping on Cam Newton's career, but Cam Newton now at this point in his career isn't the same guy he was 2 or 3 years ago. Never mind 5 or 6 years ago when he was winning MVP. So Cam was washed. Cam was terrible. Brady won the Super Bowl. They spent $250 million. Like, they weren't going to start Cam Newton again. So to me, it was a pretty simple math equation. It was, they brought in a new guy, they spent a bunch of money, Brady embarrassed them, and Cam can't play. Like, he was the only reasonable option. It wasn't going to be Hoyer. It wasn't going to be Stidham. It couldn't be Cam. It had to be Mac Jones. So it was really as simple as that for me.
So then, do you look at everything that happened leading up to Mac Jones being anointed as the starter here as, was it obvious to you during training camp, the way they were splitting the reps, that he would be the guy? Or was it just sort of a giant charade from Bill to try and throw everybody off the inevitable scent?
Well, I think it was more the second thing, but I think the reps were never as pronounced in favor of Cam as people were making them out to be. And like, I do think that was purposefully misleading by Bill Belichick. I do. Like, he had Cam go first through every drill. He had Cam go, you know, first reps in every game, start every game, all 3 preseason games. And I think that threw enough people off the scent. I think that alone had enough people going, he's the starter. Like, we don't need to worry about this anymore. He's going first through drills. Bill wouldn't put somebody first through drills who wasn't going to start, when in reality, the overall reps were about equal between Mac Jones and Cam Newton, at least when it came to first team reps. And then if you want to get into like just the volume of repetitions, I know that's something that Tom Curran has discussed. Like, it was heavily in favor of Mac Jones. So yeah, I think it was mostly a charade. And I think in retrospect, and I didn't have this right, I think we all had it backwards when it came to, oh, it wasn't a competition. It was never going to be a competition. It was always going to be Cam. It was never going to be a competition. It wasn't a competition. It was always going to be Mac. Like, that's now what I believe in retrospect.
Yeah, so I would say I don't think it was always going to be Mac, but what we did get wrong based on people I've talked to over there is that I think we were saying, okay, for Mac to be the starter, he has to win in a knockout. It actually was the other way around. For Cam to be the starter, it had to be really clear that he was the better option because, as you pointed out, they took Mac Jones in the first round. Mac Jones is the future. There is not only an emotional investment in him, but a real investment of resources there. And also, oh, by the way, the offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels, really likes and believes in Mac Jones because he can operate his system. He can be what Tom Brady never was, which was is a system quarterback, and they feel like they can win with that. And so that takes me into the season opener on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. I was impressed with what I saw from Mac Jones. You look at the numbers, 29 at 39, 281, 1 touchdown, no interceptions. I thought that was good, really good. I mean, he certainly did his part, Jones. But the way I look at it at the end of the day is this, and I think you're going to see this for a good chunk of the year. Mac Jones was certainly not the reason the Patriots lost this game, but he also wasn't the reason they won. He didn't make that play that an elite quarterback makes to pull out the win. I think that's the way it's going to be most of the year. Like, I don't think you're going to look at it and be like, Mac Jones was the difference in this game, negative or positive.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good way of putting it. He was fine. Like, he definitely wasn't bad. He was fine. And there were things he did that I was impressed by, you know, hanging in the pocket, taking some hits, like, you know, some accurate strikes down the field. But I think a lot of that is because we just weren't used to watching a competent quarterback. Last year, we watched Cam Newton, and we all forgot what a real starting caliber, high-level NFL quarterback looks like. And, you know, Cam just broke our brains. I said this a bunch on the radio. Cam broke our brains. We got used to watching Cam, and we're like, oh, a completed pass. Oh, wow, a converted 3rd and 6. And I think people have just lost their minds on that, you know, a couple of plays here and there. Now, all of a sudden, he's this high-end quarterback. If I didn't know any better looking at the stat line, I would have thought it was Jared Goff's stat line. If I didn't know any better, I would have thought it was Jimmy Garoppolo's stat line. Or, you know, Arcan said this to me, Tua. Like, that didn't look that different than Tua's stat line. I think he looked better using my eyes watching the game than Tua did on Sunday. But that's a pretty pedestrian quarterback line in 2021. That might mean he's a starting quarterback. I'm not saying he was terrible or bad or can't play in the NFL, but like, this next coming thing with Mac Jones, I think a lot of that is related to what we watched last year. And what we watched last year was just a brutal, brutal watch with Cam Newton.
Yeah, I mean, it is all relative. You know, it's relative to the fact what you're comparing him to last year, which was Cam Newton, which I think was a real nadir for the Patriots and quarterback play. In fact, the 10 touchdown passes, and Cam didn't even have all of those when you're looking at it. There were 10 touchdown passes last year for the Patriots. That's the fewest in the NFL since 2012. I mean, they just had such an anemic passing offense. So something that even remotely resembles an NFL passing offense, to your point, Jones, you're going to be like, oh, my God, this looks great. And the other part is I think we're grading on the curve of Mac Jones being a rookie. And I think for a rookie, he was excellent. But again, you know, I think that it was one game that he had a long time to prepare for. Let's see what it is moving forward now when he doesn't have as much time to prepare. And I think as well, you know, I've been around Bill Belichick for a long time, Jones, and when he talks about quarterbacks, he talks about two things at the end of the day, judging them on wins and losses and how many points did you put on the board. Mac Jones was not the reason they lost that game. He didn't fumble. That was Damian Harris. But you're not going to win a lot of football games when you score 16 points and go 1-for-4 in the red zone. That's not all on the quarterback. But sometimes if you're and this is why I say like system quarterback, to me, sometimes the right thing on paper is not the right thing based on reality in the context of the game. Like at some point you might have to force in or drill in a throw to get a touchdown when the safe thing to do, the easy thing to do is to say, oh, check down.
Yeah. I think that's why you see, you know, who is it? TJ Ward. Is that the safety who's been calling him out?
Yes.
With the check downs? Like, yeah, that's why I compare it to Jared Goff, what he did. Like, I know Goff got to a Super Bowl. Maybe a lot of people would look at that as a high end compliment. I look at it as a guy who never really stresses a defense and never has a defense freaking out and on their heels because he's going to keep everything in front of the defense. And that's a lot of what I saw out of Mac Jones. And you're right. It's one game. It's his rookie start to his career. And maybe there's more room for growth. There might be more room for growth. But what I saw was kind of the book on him coming out of college, a guy who, again, will keep it in front of the defense, short, checkdowns, safe. To your point, and yeah, I'm shocked they're as favored as they are, and I don't know if the line changed overnight, but what I saw was 5.5 points in New York against the Jets. Like, they knew what Brian Flores was going to do on defense. Flores knew what they were going to do, but they knew what Flores was going to do on defense. They had a lot of time to prepare for that game, as you cited, and they were at home. Like, I don't know how they're 5.5 point favorites when they scored 16 points last week. Everybody's been dumping on Zach Wilson. He scored 14. He led 2 touchdown drives. I think there were only 5 other quarterbacks who scored fewer points in week one than Mac Jones. Zach Wilson was one. Daniel Jones was another. Ryan Tannehill had checked out Aaron Rodgers. Like, there were not many quarterbacks, not many offenses that scored fewer points than the Patriots in week one. So, you know, there were some things I liked. There definitely were, especially the toughness, the throw to James White everyone's talked about.
Great throw.
That one's right. The strike on the left side sideline, the Nelson Agholor, great throw. There were some things that jumped out, but I just feel like there's way, way too much of an overreaction. And it feels like a softer Jets-type fan base, Jaguars-type fan base. Like, let's talk up the new – even though we lost, let's talk up the new QB. And that gets my guard up a little bit.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting. And that ties into this thing I want to talk about, Jones. You know what struck me the most about the Patriots losing this game?
What's that?
Is that this is the type of game that they used to always win in the heyday of the dynasty because the other team would beat themselves. And the team that beat themselves on Sunday was the Patriots with the penalties and the lack of execution in the red zone. You look at the numbers from that game. I mean, I thought, you know, dominated is not the right word, but I thought the Patriots got the better of the play in that game. And the numbers reflect that when you look at 259 yards of total offense for the Miami Dolphins compared to 393 for the Patriots. It seems like that Belichick magic isn't quite what it used to be because they used to just sit around and wait for teams to beat themselves. Now they're the team that beats themselves.
Yeah. And look, I think I've said this a lot. Brady masked a lot of what the Patriots couldn't make up for. He masked a lot of their weaknesses. He masked a lot of Bill Belichick's weaknesses.
Brady's team turns it over 4 times, has 11 penalties for 106 yards, yet they win. because at the end of the day, he got the ball last. So Bruce Arians gets the win. And, you know, Chris Godwin's off the hook for his fumble in a way that Damian Harris isn't. That really is the Brady effect. That's the difference. Everybody in Tampa feels good about themselves. Bruce Arians, he doesn't rock the Kangles anymore, but it's like he's won a Super Bowl. I mean, I don't think Bruce Arians is any better of a coach than he was before Tom Brady. But now he has a Super Bowl to his name, and he's winning games he has no business winning because he has Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think you see that a lot in the NFL now. And I'm not saying Bill can't coach. Bill knows what he's doing. But, you know, this idea that Bill can figure it out with any quarterback, and I was guilty of falling into that a little bit last year. I thought they'd be better with Cam. I didn't think he was as done as he was. He clearly was. So I fell into that a little bit last year. I've seen it now. I've seen it with other teams. I just saw it with the Bucks. Like, if you have the quarterback, the coach doesn't matter. If you have the quarterback, you can overcome it. Now, maybe if you have a great coach and a decent quarterback, they can piece it together. Maybe this will be a good test case for that with Mac Jones if he's even a decent quarterback. But I know the other way works, where the great quarterback, bozo coach, can win. So I'd rather have that. It's a long way of saying the coach may not be irrelevant, but he's pretty close to being irrelevant in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I think irrelevant strong, but here's what I will say. I think
close to irrelevant.
I mean, irrelevant's tough because I look at Bill and I say he's worth two, maybe 2.5 wins a year with what he can bring to the table. And I'm basing that on last year where that team was 5-11 talent and they went 7-9. But I think what people get wrong and have gotten wrong in this market is the idea that the coach can be the centerpiece of a contending team. That's just not, I mean, I don't, this is me philosophically, take the names out of it. It could be Joe Jones and Jack Johnson, coach and quarterback, not Brady and Belichick. You cannot convince me, Jones, that a head coach can have as much of an impact on winning and losing as the greatest player of all time at the single most influential position in all of North American professional sports. I'm sorry.
Right.
You can't convince me of that.
But the NFL is not far off from the NBA in that way. If you want to say the coach in the NFL is more important than the NBA, I'd grant you that.
Yeah,
I would.
Is.
But
yes,
it's really, really trending that way, where if you have the quarterback, for the most part, you're going to be fine. You're going to be a playoff team. And a lot of teams, you know, if they had Aaron Rodgers won with a coach who's not very good,
Mike
right?
McCarthy,
now, maybe he should have won more. Maybe he would have won more with a better coach, but he was able to overcome it and win one. We just mentioned Arians. Like, that's a couple of examples right there. You know, who did Peyton Manning win with when he was in Denver? Like, nothing special. So I think if you have that great quarterback, just like if you have that great star in the NBA, it doesn't matter who your head coach is. It doesn't matter if it's Frank Vogel in the Lakers. You have LeBron. I think we're pretty close to that in the NFL.
Wow. Gratuitous shot there at Frank Vogel. That's why I love you, Jones.
Bill Belichick, Frank Vogel Bill Vogel, Frank Belichick is what I meant to say there. Yeah,
but I do think you hit on something that I've been saying, and this goes back to the Cam versus Mac thing, which obviously is over. And let's see what Mac can do. You know, I've said I think he can play at an Andy Dalton type of level this year, and who knows? You know, I've said I think the ultimate ceiling on him at his highest is like a Kirk Cousins, and I thought he looked closer to Kirk Cousins than Andy Dalton in Game One. But I think this is the real question. It was never to me Mac versus Cam. It was the idea of it's like Bill versus Bill. Bill with an elite franchise quarterback versus Bill with a guy who's maybe in the top 15, which according to that Ian O'Connor book, that's all they need, or they believe that's all they need in Foxborough.
Right.
And so I think this is a fascinating season and a fascinating test case for the Patriots, because I think Mac Jones can play to a level where he's in, you know, the top half of the quarterbacks in the, I mean, there's 32 of them. If you're telling me he's going to be 14, 15, or 16, do I think he can get to that as a rookie coached by Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick? He can. You know why I know that? Because in 2008, Matt Cassel, who hadn't started a game since high school, by the end of the year was playing at that level. So, but this is the test case, you know. In 08, they win 11 games, but they don't make the playoffs. Can you be a contending team and win playoff games with a quarterback who's just in the top half of the league, not elite and not a difference maker?
Yeah, I mean, look, I already feel confident in saying, and this is another thing I've said on the radio, I already feel confident in saying Mac Jones is better than Matt Cassel. And, you know, Matt Cassel in 2008, I mean, Matt Cassel turned into a Pro Bowler in Kansas City, right? I think he made a Pro Bowl in Kansas City. So, you know, Matt Cassel, I think, turned into more that year. And you covered it, Gasper, especially early. Like, it was horizontal throws to the wide receiver in the flat, checkdowns to the back, and that's like all it was. Like, Mac Jones already pushed it more than Matt Cassel did
True.
In one game than Cassel did that year. And Castle was surrounded by just a ridiculous amount of like a team that went 18-0, 18-1. If you're telling me that Mac Jones can be somewhere between 10 and 20 this year in the NFL, they should win, you know, their 9-10 games and get into the postseason and be a wild card team. I still want to see that to believe it, that they can do it, especially considering the lack of a supporting cast around Mac Jones. And I do still think there's a lack of a supporting cast there, but
you do wait, hold on. Even with all the money they spent, you think you still don't think there's enough weaponry there,
no.
Huh?
No, I think they spent plenty of money, but I question how they spent it. I don't think they needed two tight ends. I don't think they needed to spend that money on two tight ends. I think they could have got a real number one wide receiver. And I think Aguilar looked pretty good week one.
Yeah, he was
good.
But
you can do better than Nelson Aguilar and Kendrick Bourne and a couple of middling tight ends. Yeah, I don't think they spent that money very wisely. I think they spent a lot of it. I don't think they spent it very wisely, no.
Well, $87.4 million on the two tight ends. The good news for them, Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry, was that they caught every ball thrown their way. 8 catches for 73 yards, which is not great for two guys, but they caught every ball thrown their way. The bad news, in my opinion, Jones, is, like we said, team went 1-for-4 in the red zone. When you're paying those guys what you're paying them and you're building this offense the way you're building it, those guys have to be difference makers in the end zone. You know, when you get down into the end zone area, the red zone area, it's not so much about strategy and X's and O's. It's about Jimmy's and Joe's. It's like, I'm just better than this guy. And for what they're paying Smith and Henry, they needed some plays, some difference maker plays from those guys down there, and they didn't get them.
No, I thought Henry looked pretty average, middling, mediocre. Like you barely noticed him in the first half of the game. He didn't do anything. And in the second half of the game, he had, a couple of high difficulty catches, a sliding catch on a third down conversion. But I was pretty underwhelmed by Hunter Henry. I thought Smith looked a lot better than his stats indicated. You know, he had at least one play come back from a penalty that would have been for big yardage. Yeah. He had the carry on the opening drive. Like, I thought he looked more worth the money than Hunter Henry in that one game. And, you know, I like how they used him. You know, it seemed like they used him somewhat creatively. I mean, Hunter Henry seemed like, you know, he was Matt Lacoste out there. So I'm sure he'll be better than that at the end of the day. But if you're asking me to wager on one of the two to be like a red zone dominator, it'd be Jonnu Smith, who I think had 8 touchdowns last year in Tennessee.
I mean, one of those guys has to step up and be red zone dominators, because I'm not sure really who else they can go to in the passing game. And then, you know, the running game was, you know, solid, but I think it was skewed a little bit by the run that Damian Harris ripped off, you know, to start the game, sort of skewed the numbers. Yeah. And when they really needed to run the ball, they didn't run it as well as they did last year when they were the number 4 rushing offense in the NFL. So you look at, you know, Damian Harris was able to rip off that 35 yarder, but take that one away from his 100 yard day and it looks a little different. Dare I say they miss Cam? You know, Cam and his 12 touchdowns, Jones. You know, remember those 12 touchdowns, those 12 rushing touchdowns every Patriot fan was telling you about when he was the starter?
Yeah. I thought you were going to say Sony Michel. That's where I thought you were going with it. Sony Michel. Damian Harris got tired with 23 carries. Poor Damian Harris. Sony Michel had 29 carries in an AFC championship game. I don't remember him fumbling the thing away. So I thought you were going to say they missed Sony Michel. They certainly could have used another body in the backfield the way Bill handcuffed the whole thing.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. And that was another interesting element. I know we've talked about it, but Mac Jones, as good as he was, and the fact that, look, I think we were all more comfortable watching it because it looked like the Patriots offense. I think that was part of the issue last year. Aesthetically, the Patriots didn't look like the Patriots offensively, and they weren't efficient or effective. On Sunday, they did look like the Patriots in terms of passing the game. They were efficient in the passing game. They just weren't really effective in terms of scoring points. But I think when you look at it overall, like sort of, you know, the big picture of it, I start to wonder if the red zone issues are larger than the quarterback, because our good friend Mark the Beetle Bertrand has talked about this. This is like 3 years in a row now where they've had issues in the red zone. In red zone, they've been in the 20s in red zone ranking. And last year they were 24th in the NFL in red zone touchdown percentage. So it seems like this transcends the quarterback position. I mean, this is a problem.
So I had not heard Beetle say that, but it's a good point. The final year with Brady, they weren't good. Last year, they weren't good with Cam. And, you know, it's one game so far this year, but that's a bit of a trend going on in the red zone. So fair point. I hadn't really considered that. Who's he laying that at the feet of, McDaniels or Bill? Because I'd lay that at the feet of Bill.
Well, it's interesting. I think most people are laying it at the feet of Josh McDaniels. And look, Josh McDaniels, I said this from the jump when they ended up going with Mac Jones here. I mean, that's his guy. And I thought it had as much to do with Bill's faith in Josh to get Mac Jones to play at a certain level, much the way he did in 2008 with Matt Castle. And you're absolutely right about, you know, Castle in 08. I remember doing a story on wide receiver screens, a feature story, because that's how many sideways passes he threw. But by the end of the year, he was throwing it downfield. And you'll be shocked to know he finished in the top 10 in the NFL in completions that year. And he was 11th in touchdown passes, Matt Castle. So I think there's a lot of faith in Josh, but you know, you got to get the ball in the end zone. And to me, Josh is one of these guys who is like a Kyle Shanahan or like a Sean McVay, who feels like, okay, if the quarterback just does what I say, we'll never have a bad play. So you got to scheme it up and find a way to get into the end zone. So I don't know who Beadle's blaming, but I am blaming Josh McDaniels at this point.
Yeah, I would blame Bill because, and I know it's McDaniels calling the plays, but like, at some point, Bill's got to step in, right? Like, you're the head coach. It's your operation. You're signing off on all the game planning. You're a part of all the game planning. You can overrule any play call you want. Not that you want to gum up those works and do that every single week, but you can overrule anything you want. You can certainly change any, you know, direction that the team is going offensively or whatever. So that's why ultimately I lay the blame at Bill. I give Bill the credit when it's good. I give Bill the blame when it's bad. I don't give McDaniels any credit when they're good. So I'm not going to give him the blame here. Maybe we could see some more creative play calling, but if you're just going to let Josh keep doing his thing, at the end of the day, the buck stops with Bill on that one.
And just to go back and give it some context, to 2019, they were 26th in the NFL in red zone touchdown percentage. So last year was actually an improvement to 24th in red zone touchdown percentage with Cam Newton and his running ability. But yeah, that's certainly an area. I mean, to me, you know, not to belabor the point, Jones, but that was the difference in the game. Miami was 2-for-2. The Patriots were 1-for-4. That's the game right there. Well, I mean, situational football. Isn't that supposed to be what they excel in?
Supposed to be what Bill's great at. They were undisciplined, you know, 8 penalties for whatever the yardage was, and a couple of horrible personal fouls. You know, the Judon one on special teams, the Dietrich Wise one on special teams. Like, those are bad undisciplined penalties. That's a reflection of coaching. The turnovers, you know, that's me losing that turnover battle, reflection of coaching.
Maybe I mean, I chalked that a little bit up to it being the first game, only 3 preseason games, guys not playing real games, you know. Maybe, I mean, you saw that with Lamar Jackson. Like, do you blame John Harbaugh for Lamar Jackson's fumbles?
No, so here's what I was going to say. For a one-off game, and I know this, we're talking about a one-off game, but like if this is an issue, then I would put it on the coach. So for a game, if you don't want to put that on Bill, fine. You're right. I wouldn't put that on Harbaugh for the Monday night game. Fine. But over the course of a season, yeah, I'd start to put that on the coach. You know, when it comes to not being able to execute in the red zone, that's a reflection of coaching. Starting games, finishing halves, finishing games, those are reflections of coaching. You know, get the clock management there, being able to scheme up a stop when you know the other team has to run out the clock, when you have all your timeouts plus the 2-minute warning and you can't get the other team's offense off the field. Like, to me, all of that was a poor start for Bill Belichick, who, Gasper, I'm sure you know this, I'm sure most fans know this, 7-10 since Tom Brady left for Tampa Bay.
Well, I'll take it a step further, and I heard this number today. Going back to the last 5 games of the 2019 regular season, and that this also includes the playoff loss to Tennessee, if you go back that far, Bill Belichick is 9-14 since December 1st of 2019 as Patriots coach.
That's an even worse number than I was capable of cooking up. That's a more diabolical number than I thought of, Gasper. So good for you. Touche to you, because I did not have that one ready to go.
Feel free. You know, take that one, Vulture. Take that one, Sports Vulture. You can use that, Sports Vulture. Dark Knight, you know, use that one on the night show to be able to encourage the masses, to be able to lighten up their day. You know, obviously, I know that people around Patriots Nation are feeling bad about this loss, and you really like to uplift them, Jones. That's what you do on your show.
Well, I will take it. I'll roll that right out, right? At 7 o'clock, we'll roll out of the blocks and the Gasper stat of the day.
All right. Oh, yeah. Feel free to set the table with that one.
Well, yeah, maybe even before we set the
okay, table. All right.
Nice little appetizer, and amuse-bouche is what that'll be.
Okay. Oh, I like it. Yeah. I like that a lot. But in talking about that, I mean, 9-14 with Bill, and I know in this market, I know what we do, Sports Talk Radio and some of the other stuff. we can be, you know, sort of captious when it comes to Bill, right? You know, maybe overly picky. The guy's the greatest coach of all time. He's won 6 championships. But what does that 9-14 record say, if anything, about Bill Belichick?
I go back more to the start of last year without Brady. I think that's a greater reflection. I mean, maybe if you want to tie in that last month, while Brady was still there, he couldn't get Brady to buy in, and maybe there was just too much already out of the way between those two, too much to come back from for those two. But he couldn't get Brady to buy in. He couldn't get the rest of the team to buy in. That was a home playoff game that I still think they should have won against Tennessee back in 2019. So I like the number. It makes Bill look a little worse, but I don't know how much to correlate that last month as opposed to how he's been without Brady. Because even if Brady was checked out or Bill couldn't get the team to buy in, I think Brady shares a lot of that responsibility for that year too. So, you know, the 7-10 without Brady is right in line with what he's been the rest of his career.
All right,
one playoff appearance without Brady, right? No division titles. Like, that's more in line with what he's been without Brady.
So let me rephrase and reframe the question there, because I think part of Brady checking out at the end of the year, and I don't necessarily believe he checked out, but I think I will say this. I think he became resigned to the fact that team was not good enough.
Frustrated.
Yeah, it was not good enough to ultimately get to where they wanted to go, and he didn't have enough weapons there. So let me ask you this. What does the 9-14 say about Bill Belichick, the GM, Bill Belichick, the team builder?
Oh, well, that says everything, because we all know what the roster looked like in 2019. And, you know, they made some moves that year. I mean, the Sanu move, they way overpaid. I knew that from the second that trade went down. But I still thought he would help more than he did. That was a misevaluation. The Antonio Brown thing was a disaster from the start. You know me, I love the N'Keal Harry pick. I was wrong about N'Keal Harry. The only person more wrong about that was Bill Belichick. So, you know, they tried to make some moves to help Tom Brady. Here and there. I mean, last year, 2020, they barely put anything around Cam Newton. Yeah. The line from Cecil Newton in the Funky Friday podcast that they did, that it was a Honda Civic with a yellow door falling off. Yep. And a side view mirror.
Yep.
Held on.
Four-cylinder engine, only 3 cylinders working.
Wire. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, that is a huge reflection on Bill. And I think, you know, Robert Kraft didn't give him much of a long leash with that. It was the final year with Brady where they made the playoffs, fine. Last year without Brady, they missed the playoffs, and Robert said, okay, we're not doing this anymore. We're going to actually spend some money. I, again, would question how intelligently they spent that money. And I think there were better ways to do that than some of the guys they splurged on day one, for sure. But no, Bill, the team builder, the last 2-3 years has had a rough, rough go of it. Even despite how much people want to pump up this draft class, they've had a rough, rough go of it. Yeah.
I'm curious, when are we going to like get over the fact that Tom's not here anymore?
Never.
It seems like any conversation, every single conversation after every single game for the past however many years has been about, well, if Tom was here, he would have done this. And it's like, quarterbacks leave towns, leave teams literally all the time, every single year.
Yeah, sure, but not the greatest of all time.
We need to collectively just say, like, what's in the past is in the past. Right. And like, we need to move forward.
Well, here's the thing, Ellen, and I'll let Jones speak for himself on this. I think that would be easier to do if Tom Brady weren't winning championships with a sad sack franchise in Tampa that had only won one Super Bowl before. And before he got there, it had like one winning season in a decade. So it's just really, I think, difficult when you look at it and say this didn't have to end and it ended. And I also think that it's something that Mac Jones speaks to and he's spoken to since he got here. He says, we have to play to the Patriot standard. We have to play to the standard. Well, what is that standard and who set that standard or had a big part in setting that standard? Tom Brady. So if the Patriots are still going to be the Patriots, then I think, in my mind, you know, the standard, the bar you're judging everything against is the bar that was set by Brady and Belichick when those two were together. Jones, what do you think?
No, I think there's a couple of things that we could no longer talk about Tom Brady. I mean, number one, he could retire. Number two, Bill could retire. And the other piece is what Gasper just had to say, which is if Brady was just another QB, like he looked for maybe the first 10, 12 weeks of the season last year, and they were one and done in the postseason, then maybe we wouldn't knee-jerk react, compare everything to Tom Brady, but he won. I mean, it's hard to ignore that. And, you know, while Bill's still here, while Brady's still playing elsewhere and doing it at a high level, like, we're going to keep measuring those two things up, at least until Mac Jones or whoever, whatever that quarterback is, it feels like we have a real answer to Tom Brady. And even then, that probably won't stop. So yeah, I don't think that's going away anytime soon. Maybe we don't have to do it every single week. Maybe not every single week, although week four will be a big one. But I don't think that's going away anytime soon.
I mean, it's definitely, Ellen, you raise a good point. I mean, it's definitely unhealthy, but it's also unavoidable in my mind.
Like, it's just not like
much
he's...
Not much of what we do on Sports Talk Radio is healthy.
That's
not
true.
Not
good point, Jones.
It's just like we all know he is the greatest. Like, it is what it is. Arguably saying he would go to any single team and they would be a fantastic team. So it's just he's never coming back to us.
Yeah, I think it would be different if it, let's say, like, he tore his ACL and or let's run back to like the 49ers situation. You know, Joe Montana coming off an injury, but you already know you have Steve Young and you decide to move on. I think people could be okay with it. I think it's a combination of a number of factors. And that's why I've been saying this for a while. You know, the quarterback thirst here is real, and that people so desperately want that next guy. And they're very hopeful, obviously, that Mac Jones will be that guy. And he certainly looks the part to a degree. But I think part of it is the fact there wasn't a clear succession plan. Or if he had left, like, say, after tearing his ACL, and you're like, oh, you know, he's banged up, he's injured, you know, it was a gamble to bring him back. But they the way he left, and the fact that that Bill didn't do more really to keep him, I think that stings. It really does. I think it sort of speaks a little bit to some hubris and the idea of it being about, we don't need the greatest of all time. Like, if I had to say Bill Belichick has one blind spot, I would say this. I think he has a tendency to believe more in processes than people. You know, I think he thinks if we take a bunch of people and we follow this process and everybody does this and everybody does their job and everybody ignores the noise and whatever platitude you want to throw out there and we coach them up, we're going to win.
Yeah, so I think it is a massive blind spot for Bill Belichick. I don't know what that comes from. I don't know if it stems from, you know, growing up in a coaching household and just ultimately believing that players can be coached up. I don't know if it comes from, you know, not being the greatest athlete ever. You know, not playing at a high level professionally and ultimately believing that, you know, he overcame that. So he can overcome these other high level athletes out there with his system. I don't know what that comes from, but I'll just say this. I actually never personally, and maybe fans do, I never had the biggest problem with the Patriots not having a succession plan. You know, I didn't think the guy needed to be on the roster. In other words, like, I didn't need Jimmy Garoppolo here. I didn't need the guy waiting in the wings on the roster. Not drafting a guy last year, I thought was egregious. And I didn't love Mac Jones a ton coming out of college. The one thing I did like is they at least took him in the first round and they took a shot. Yeah. And they didn't say we're waiting till the third round.
They invested
and we're going to try to
position.
Turn some third rounder. Again, going back to you know, process over everything else, we're going to try to turn some third rounder into the answer at quarterback, or fourth rounder, whatever Stidham was, into the answer at quarterback. Like, I like that they at least took a guy in the first round. It shows some conviction. I don't know whose conviction, Kraft's, Bill's, McDaniels, some collaborative, like, I don't know whose conviction, but organizationally it showed some belief in Mac Jones as a prospect. So that had me talked into the pick a little bit more than you know, just Mac Jones, the generic prospect going anywhere in the NFL.
You know, I think you can look at the loss this way on Sunday, and I think a lot of Patriots fans have. They lost a game but found a quarterback, and I understand the optimism from that standpoint. And I'll go on record. I've been critical of Mac Jones. Now, people sort of forget that when I made the comment I made about Jag Jones, that was well before he was a Patriot. It was during the
nickname. I wouldn't run from that nickname. That's a good nickname.
It was during the draft process, and I feel like a lot of people hear Jones changed their opinion of Mac Jones the moment he became a Patriot and put on a Patriot uniform. But all that being said, what I've seen from him so far, he has exceeded my expectations. And if 10 games into this year, he's Justin Herbert, I will eat it and say that I was wrong. You know, I was wrong. So I'll tell you, based on the way he played in the opener, it's only one game. Do I think he's a good enough quarterback for them to make the playoffs with this year? I do. What do you think?
Based on what he did, no. I need to see more than that. I need to see a guy who can push the. I mean, you mentioned Herbert, and like,
yeah,
if he's Justin Herbert, you know, and I don't even mean stylistically Justin.
Yes, they're different quarterbacks.
And the arms, not Justin Herbert, but like, if they're 7-10 at the end of the year or 8-9 at the end of the year, they miss the playoffs, but like, they clearly have the guy. I'll ultimately come around and be okay with that. But no, if you're putting up Jared Goff stat lines And, you know, you don't have a completely stacked roster around you. You have a good roster around you, certainly better than last year. But I still think this roster has holes. Then, no, I don't think that's good enough to make the postseason. And the AFC, no.
So we'll see how it plays out. I mean, part of the reason I feel that way is the schedule. And we'll wrap it up here in a little bit on this. That's the segue to Sunday's game against the Jets. I mean, you're going to play the Jets twice a year. It bailed you out last year. You got two wins against them to help you finish 7-9. So the schedule is certainly in the Patriots' favor. How do you see this game on Sunday against the Jets and another rookie quarterback in Zach Wilson, who got off to a pretty rough start in his loss to the Panthers as the Jets went down 19-14, started out 2 of 9 with a pick, finished 20-37, 258, two touchdowns and an interception. He looked to me like a typical Jets quarterback, and I don't mean that in a good way.
No. So I didn't watch him a ton. You know, I watched some red zone. I saw some highlights, you know, so I'm not pretending I sat there and watched every throw that Zach Wilson made. But it seems like the general consensus is that, I mean, he was running for his life. They couldn't block for him. They lost Mekhi Becton in that first game, who, you know, has the potential to be a real high-end tackle in the NFL. And, it seems like the Patriots should win that game. I'm not saying they won't win that game. I just think 5.5 points in New York for Mac Jones's first game on the road, where he put up 16 points and Zach Wilson put up 14, that feels like a lot of points. That feels like a lot of points. I think that's going to be a close game. I know Bill never loses to rookie quarterbacks, but he lost to Tua last year.
Good point.
Like, I'm not sold that that's a win for the Patriots. And it is kind of a must win when you think about it, Gasper. And maybe this is over-dramatizing things. I've been guilty of doing that in the past.
No.
It's a must win in a lot of ways. Yeah, so the Saints looked awesome week one against the checked out Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. They've had some injuries since then. Davenport, Lattimore, McCoy, one of their offensive linemen. Like, they lost some talent there, but they look great week one against the Packers. And then we all know about Brady week four. Like, if you don't beat the Jets this week, Brady might not be coming in for the game of the season week four. He might be coming in to end your season week four. If you don't beat the Jets, you might be 0-4 after that Brady game, and your season might be over. And you know Tom Brady would be salivating to do that. Again, apologies, Ellen, for talking about Tom Brady over and over and over again. But he might be coming in to end your season week four if you don't beat the Jets this week. So you better beat the Jets this week. And it's a game they should probably win. They're certainly favored in Vegas.
Yeah, I think they're going to win this game. I really do. I don't have a lot of faith in Zach Wilson going up against Bill Belichick. And I think that Mekhi Becton, the left tackle for the Jets, being out is going to be a major problem because Wilson was already running for his life. But man, nobody paints a dark and dire picture quite like you, Jones. That was so well done. It went from me asking you about a game that I think is like a shoe-in win to you painting a picture of Tom Brady coming here as the Grim Reaper for the Patriots season.
Yeah.
Well done. Bravo, my friend. Bravo.
Thank you. You got to get it in before the game, Gasper, because, you know, the next thing you know, now that I put that out in the atmosphere, the Patriots will win like 42-0 and Mac Jones will throw 5 touchdowns. And, you know, you got to get that out there while you can.
It's truly a gift, man. You have a real gift. You have a real gift. Last question for you. We'll get you out on this one.
Sure.
Do you feel like the Stephon Gilmore situation is being underplayed here? The fact they're not going to have their best player, and he is their best player, for the first 6 weeks of the season, and people are just kind of like, oh, ho-hum, like, you know, Mac Jones turns out he's a pretty good quarterback. The Patriots will be fine.
I think it's underplayed. I think he could have made a big difference in that Dolphins game, whether he's on Devontae Parker or Waddle. I have no idea, but I think he could have made a big difference in that game. And I would hate to think that they put him on PUP for non-injury reasons over nickel and diming him over some contract that they don't want to pay him. And they're losing games in the meantime because of it, to prove some point and win some negotiation. They could have used him in week one. And if that's what's going on, that to me is shameful.
Yeah, it's a story. I think they're very happy with the way the story is being portrayed, which is to say it's not really being portrayed at all or really talked about. You know, Mac Jones has completely overshadowed the fact that their best player is unavailable for the first 6 games. You know, they're passing it off as a health thing, but it's very, very unclear how much is contractual and how much is physical. All right. That's the one and only Adam Jones of 98.5, the Sports Hub. You can catch him on the Adam Jones Show on 98.5 with Christian Arcan. You guys are on at 7. Are you excited for like Bruins and Celtics to come back so you don't have to do all these full 5-hour shows?
I don't know. Get back to me. Are the Patriots winning a bunch of games or are they losing?
All
I don't
right.
know. Then we can fill in the gaps from there.
All right. Well, Jones, thanks for joining us here on the Take 5 podcast. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. We appreciate it as always. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast so others can find it and enjoy it. And now you can email us at take5@wcvb.com. We'd love to get your feedback and hear your thoughts. We'll catch you next time.